Paul Mayer's Children's Television Archive.
A unique idea for an album, and which it was a read-along situation, and with the record played, and at the end of each record, they would tell the kids to turn the page, but the kid would read along on that page what was being said. Billy May did the music, and my father, a voice man for Disney, Pinto Colvin, who did the voices, he's dead now, for Pluto and Goofy and two of the dwarves, Grumpy and one of the other dwarves, and a lot of commercials, was hired to do the voice of a clown they had decided to call Bozo, which is a public domain clown name. It's about 300 years old. And the album caught on. It was the first album to sell over 1 million copies. And my dad was hired by Capitol, while still doing cartoon voices and all, to travel the country. They copied the makeup and the costume from the artist rendition on the album cover. The appearances he would make were in Macy's parades and big things all over this country and Canada, and Bozo became immensely popular. He had on Los Angeles' Channel 11 a show doing Bozo. I think the show was called Bozo the Clown. And this was back around 1950. I still know some people who were connected with the show. Stuart Phelps was the director then. He's a television and movie producer now. Captain Dan Cook with the Los Angeles Police Department, their top PR officer, worked puppets on the show then. Yeah, right. And you see Dan apologizing for murders and things all the time on television, a handsome white-haired gentleman. He's still a puppeteer. And he worked puppets on the show, and they had various acts on. The show was very popular. I think for a while there, my dad and I were opposite each other. About that time, he was on once a week with Bozo, and it was just about that time I did my first children's show in the Los Angeles area, called Nutsy the Clown. Prior to that, I had been a freelance actor, mostly in radio, some television, because TV was pretty new then. I'd done a lot of writing, and the way I got this show is because writing, as I did for a number of audience participation shows, I would be a writer on it, but I also did funny, quote, stuff in the warm-up. And a TV producer wanted to do a kid's show, and he knew that I'd worked with kids before in various ways, especially on some radio shows, and asked me if I would do the clown on a 15-minute show 5 days a week for his client Circus Peanuts.
So your father was doing one clown on one station, and you were doing another clown on another station?
Yeah, I think we were opposite each other for a while. there was a little overlap there. The Bozo show went off Channel 11. My show stayed on, I think it was 2.5 years on Channel 4, and expanded via Kinescope. We were on 5 days a week here, but one day a week, one of the shows was sent to San Francisco, Portland, Seattle, Salt Lake, Denver, Phoenix, San Diego, and Hawaii. And not all on NBC stations. We were on NBC locally, and it was probably the first syndicated show on the West Coast. But that show, we used a lot of live acts. I've always been an advocate in using jugglers, acrobats, variety acts. The show was very popular. It got an Emmy, I think it was either in 1951 or 1952.
What was your character like? I mean, how did you develop the character?
It was a tramp clown, though in white face, with big shoes, this trampish clown type, which I've always enjoyed doing more than the more august clown or the typical white face clown, such as I have out right now. That just came out on the Kellogg Cornflakes package. My picture is on the package now as a white face clown. I tried to convince them to use one of my tramp clown characters, but they said, no, we want the white face, make it look clean, it's a food product, it's et cetera. So it's, I don't know, the clown characters always come sort of easy for me.
When did you pick up the Bozo again to continue?
Oh, I think my show went off in 53, Nutsy the Clown. Mm-hmm. And then I did a kid show in between then for Channel 2 called Buck Sureshot, a Western show. Far different than the clown character.
Now you played like a cowboy character.
Yeah. Buck Sureshot, a really raunchy character that set the West back 50 years. Jim Aubrey came up with the name Buck Sureshot. I had been doing the character. I went on the road between the time I quit doing Nutsy the Clown and started doing Buck Sureshot. I was on the road with the Spike Jonze Show. And
that sounds super. Tell me a little about that.
Oh, that was fantastic. I advanced him by 2 weeks just doing radio and television and doing this Constable Clem, this Western character, whose name was changed later. We did 77 one-nighters in a row. And I was 2 weeks ahead of him, appearing on TV stations, mainly a few radio things, coming on cooking shows, kid shows, late night talk shows, shooting off a loud gun and saying, where is he? I'm looking for Spike Jonze and his notorious band for musical mayhem and murder. And I had a big badge on. And they said, well, he's not here yet. He'll be here in 2 weeks at the Criterion Theater, so-and-so, get your tickets now. And it was an attention getter. Mm-hmm. So we went all over the country on that. I was an old friend of Spike's and had done his television show before and a lot of different things with him. So when I came back to Hollywood, they were looking for a Western character to do a kid show to follow Captain Jet on KNXT. So I was far different than the character they had in mind, but when I auditioned for it, I had at the moment I walked out, that it was a wild, cornball, old character.
Now, did you have like a peanut gallery there too?
No, I would have like a Rheingold girl walk through the set. Those were gorgeous dolls. We did not have a peanut gallery, which is, that name started with our old circus peanut show.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah. We called it the Peanut Gallery, and that name sort of stuck, and somebody told me that was how it started, and we did call it the Peanut Gallery.
I think most people relate that to, you know, Buffalo Bob Smith.
Yeah, I have heard only that it was, you know, started that way because the Circus Peanuts was our sponsor on the old Nazi show, but I had a lot of guest stars on Buck. Who, and once in a while I was having a small group of kids, you know, maybe 30 brownies or Girl Scouts or Boy Scouts or whatever. I started sneaking in education. That was before educational TV ever started.
Or was required.
Or really required. And this rotten old character that I portrayed was so dumb that people would have to come on and teach him something. Say, no kidding, is that the way that works? Like tying knots? Some 8-year-old Boy Scout would teach him. He'd say, hey, Buck, your horse got loose, and you know, sound effects of the horse running off. Mm-hmm. Or that last dude, you got that old guy up wrong, man. Here's the way to do it. No kidding. He was like, hey, that's okay. And this was before Kennedy's assassination, of course. I always open the show coming in and pulling out a 45 single action Colt, full load blanks in it, and firing into the air really loud. I played my own villain, who was Sneaky Pete, Archfiend of the Universe. And during a cartoon or whatever, I changed wardrobes. Sneaky Pete was really so much smarter and nicer.
You can relate with him a little more.
He was rotten.
Yeah.
Because he'd come on, he'd steal Easter eggs, you know, that somebody, some nice person had left for Buck, and he'd really do terrible things to him. And in those days, of course, we did our own commercials. Unless they happen to be on film. So I would
Sneaky Pete would do the commercial too?
No, I would make up commercials for him. He invented a Mean Man kit. And he wanted all kids to buy a Mean Man kit, you know, and be rotten to their little sisters. And, you know, and scare their little sister, and maybe she'd cry and run for bed and all this sort of thing. Buck would come on, though, when I'd be talking about a legitimate product. And Buck often would finish up, and don't forget that no good, low-down, rotten, Sneaky Pete buys all other brands. I got jumped by the advertising council or some such group one time for doing that sort of thing. Almost 3 years. Yeah, that started in about 54. Went through 55 and I think into 56. And I had a large adult audience on that one. Again, another afternoon show. I knew I must be doing something wrong when people like Jonathan Winters and Cliff Arquette and Hans Connery would tell me at various things. Hey man, I saw that wild show you're doing. Jeez, that, you know, that's a gasp. How the hell did you get by doing that?
Yeah.
And
I think they thought similar. It sounds similar to Soupy Sales kind of format show.
Very much so. Very much so. And the ratings were sensational. Now, Captain Jack was on just before me. A guy named Bill Holly did that. And prior to him doing the same character, Captain Jack. Actor named Dal McKenna. So I inherited a good sized audience, but it was either my time period or whatever, but it really built from there. And then the original Mickey Mouse Club came along. Buck Sherchak didn't get any awards whatsoever. The PTA hated me.
Yeah.
I used really rotten English, and my Levi's, rather than Spangled Cowboy.
Well, that's what kept them tuned in to see what you do next.
Yeah, and the really rotten old buckskin jacket. The character was modeled after a great uncle of mine who was for real. I mean, really for real. An old Western guy who'd really been involved in the development of the West, a Civil War veteran. So I think it was about sometime in 56 when that went off, when Mickey Mouse Club came on. CBS, all their owned and operated stations, dropped all their kids' shows. Just dropped it.
Really. No.
So, there's some, then after that went off, I went back to freelancing, acting.
With this Buck Sherchak kind of got you known in Hollywood as kind of a cowboy sidekick. Were you used in cowboy movies in that form?
Oh, well, I've done some Western thing, yeah. Not exactly, yeah, on... One time on Death Valley Days, one or two Death Valley Days, I did that character under another name.
Mm-hmm.
Raunchy old guy. not a cowboy. Yeah, a Pony Express rider character. Another time it's a miner. You know, thing. But then freelanced and did some public relations work again on the road on behalf of a number of things, including the Ringling Brothers Circus. That was in 1959, and I came back here in Hollywood.
So you had some association with them?
With Ringling?
Yeah, you worked with them for a while?
Yeah, doing publicity and public relations on television and radio when they were on a tour up and down the coast.
Now, how would you do that, as a character or as yourself?
As a clown character on some shows and booking some of their people on another.
So you were like, you were a PR man for them, but you really didn't appear in any circuses or anything?
No. Uh-uh. Yeah. Though as Nutsy, I had appeared at opening nights in a lot of circuses, as Bozo, the same thing when shows come to town. But I think it was 1959, I came back here, and Channel 5 bought the films, the cartoons of Bozo, and I made it.
Who was producing those at the time?
The films,
yeah.
The shorts, mm-hmm. Larry Harmon Productions. But the program director at Channel 5, Bob Quinlan, hired me. I did not work for Harmon, just no matter what he tells anybody,
mm-hmm.
And had nothing to do with him. He's also tell people that he trained me to do that, but what he had done, my father's voice, my voice are very similar.
Mm-hmm.
What he had done with the character, he had imitated my father's voice and actions and everything else. And the cartoons.
So when did you first appear as the Bozo character we all know today with the orange hair and...
The record album that came out in the mid-40s.
Now that
was
your father.
By an artist, and that's when it first came out. Now that is copyrighted by Capitol Records. The makeup and the costume have been copyrighted. Nobody can copyright the name. That's been public domain for a long time. In fact, in a couple of languages, Bozo is a synonym for clown. But the original name was named after a fellow named Bozo somewhere in the Slovakians or the mm-hmm. Baltic area or whatever.
And so your father originally started this with the Bozo character as a voice man that they asked him
to do the voice, and then he wrote some of the Bozo songs, some of the singles.
Is that the one with the circus?
No, that he did not write that.
He did. But I was curious how the words came into that song.
That was written by Walter somebody, and then Alan Livingston, who was the vice president with Capitol Records, I think might have written some of them. At least he's got his name on. But a lot of times, executives with a record company will make a side deal to get their name on it as one of the creators. So I don't know if Alan wrote some of the lyrics or not.
To jump back to, when did you pick up on Bozo? When did you start?
1959, when I was hired, and it wasn't an audition. Bob Quinlan at Channel 5 called me in and said, "Hey, we've got a thing going here. It's going to go 5 days a week, and we bought these cartoons." And Bob had known me before. In fact, he hired me at Channel 2, he and Jim Aubrey. And he said, "You want to do it?" And we made a deal, and I started doing it. He had just caught on great.
It was easy to pick up, especially after you...
Oh, yeah.
Now, was your father still alive at that point?
Very much so, yeah.
And so he could just kick back and watch his son...
He enjoyed it. In fact, I think Quinlan had considered, if I didn't do it, having my dad do it or acting, but my dad did not want to do a 5-day-a-week show.
Mm-hmm. What was he doing at the time? Still voiceovers occasionally?
Oh, yeah. He was always busy right up until the time he died.
Mm-hmm. How long ago did he die?
10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Always really busy and, you know, doing commercials and a lot of things. Had a lot going for him. But he, so I did the Bozo thing. And we patterned the wig and the costume again after the character that originally had been drawn on, well, actually, after the cartoons that were made using that character, I think its original roots, though it had changed quite a bit, but from the album cover, the character. But, which was such a combination of so many clowns, it was an awkward costume, big floppy collar, which you hardly ever find in circuses.
It looks almost like an old Renaissance.
Right.
Italian Renaissance right. clown or something.
Right. French
clown, perhaps.
More European clown, but then every clown in the, well, so many of them have used a bulb nose. I still use one. Mm-hmm. So many of them have painted on the red or blue or whatever mouth over a white face. And then the eyebrows circle and all. The makeup is certainly not unique. One thing that makes it very unique is the upswept wig, which is a hell of a thing to have to wear.
Sure. Does it throw the weight of your head off?
If you hit it on something, you know, it turns on your head like an old fore and aft admiral bat critter who's a friend of mine, the last time I saw Tex, which was before he died in Nashville, he had mentioned he had done some kid songs, a kid album, and he and my dad would do personal appearances together in a lot of places. And they became good friends. They were both the same kind of great guy. But they're sort of like, by not promoting it, was sort of dying on the vine, and then Harmon or somebody came along with the idea of making some cartoons using the Bozo the Clown mm-hmm. character, and he acquired evidently the rights from Capitol not only to make the cartoons, in which he did the voices, he does the cartoon voice.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Harmon did the cartoon voice. But he got merchandising rights. And that, but the voice he did in the cartoon was obviously taken from the records, which my dad had done. So later on, he says he's been telling people he trained me to do the voice, and well, he was copying my dad's voice. So what's to train me to do the voice he copied from my dad? Whereas I've done a lot of my dad's voices at various times, in various things.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. So, oh God, way back in radio days, a show called Dr. Tweedy and Frank Morgan, the lead in it. I remember one time my dad was doing a big dog and I was doing a little dog. We had the animal voice and weirdo voice, crickets and gophers and things almost tied up here.
And so you've kind of kept on with that. I mean, like you're doing voice over now. I see a lot of commercials you've done.
Yeah, Hanna-Barbera thing, for instance, I did a bulldog in that, in the Yaki Doodle series. Jimmy Weldon, who used to do the Webster Webfoot show here locally, a duck character. He did the little duck in this thing, and I did the big old bulldog that talked like Wally Berry. That thing's still playing various places around.
And that was just about your last kind of thing along that line, wasn't it, as far as being a kid's host to a program? Did you do anything after that?
After that, still doing a lot of live shows. Now, I'm doing mostly Western. I'm a magician also, and I do a lot of live stuff, and I call the character Buckshot now. Mm-hmm. I do probably the only country Western magic act around, but I do those on like guest shots to publicize, for instance, the LA County Fair. For years, I've done public relations for various things, but usually with a gimmick as a clown or as a cowboy or whatever.
Do you have any idea of how many appearances you think you've made along that line as a character?
No, I have never even tried to estimate those. I used to do about 5 or 6 every weekend as far-flung places. In one day, I did 7 on a Saturday, starting out with a Boy Scout pancake breakfast in Santa Barbara at 7 in the morning, and ending up at 8 o'clock that night in San Bernardino. Another reason I only found this out long after it happened. My background is a writer, a game show idea man, etc. I was producing the Bozo Show here, and I was writing it or dreaming up the stunts for it, and also on occasion hiring tumblers, acrobats, live entertainment, which I've always been very hot for. My dad was in vaudeville originally, and I still got a love affair with vaudeville. In fact, I was town coordinator on a show called Vaudeville that's still in syndication. And I found out later that Harmon had a secretary watch my show every day. Write down everything that I did, each day's stunts and various things, whether it was balloons or whatever, and it takes a lot of time to dream these things up or to steal them from old things I had done in radio or other TV shows and switch them. I used to be a writer on Truth or Consequences, and we used switches on that.
So after a few years, he has a catalog of...
Well, he was sending them out along with the package of Bozo cartoons that the new stations would get. Day by day by day by day. And I found that out from the distributor, a guy that used to work for the distributor in New York. Every day he was copying down, and he was claiming that he was giving to other people, I found out later, that he was dreaming up all the ideas and giving them to me, and we were breaking them in here in Hollywood.
Tell me about Chucko. Was he a friend of yours?
Oh yeah, Chuck Runyon.
Yeah, where did he come from? I mean, do you know him? Or?
I know him very well, and I heard from him a while back. He is ranching up in, right out of Grants Pass, Oregon. And Chucko started down around the Long Beach area. He was in construction or war stuff or whatever, right after the war. All this sort of thing, working in a shipyard, I think it was. And his wife, Millie, they're both great people, I'm very fond of them. His wife, Millie, got an idea of building a funny little merry-go-round and Chuck becoming a clown and doing little birthday parties and things around. And Channel 7 needed a clown-type guy and auditioned a number of guys. It's during the time I think I was doing Buck Sherchot. And they liked what he was doing. He'd never been on TV before, and they hired him to do it. And all of us in the business, whether with your own station or another station, we used to trade jobs back and forth. If I got a call to do a market opening in Azusa and couldn't do it, I'd talk to Skipper Frank or Tom Hatton first. They say, geez, we're busy, and I would call Engineer Bill or Chuck Runyon or Jimmy Weldon, and they would do the same for me. We would all have a meeting once in a while in Doyle Odell. I remember one meeting we had at Nickerdale's.
Talk about mutual problems. And...
No, we talked about price fixing. Yeah, we always talked about mutual problems, but we all agreed that... Actually, it was sort of a meeting to fix our prices for PAs, which were generally around $150 a piece, which back in those days was pretty good for a half hour, 40-minute show if you were doing 3, 4, 5 in a day. Live on camera one time, I had a dog pee on my leg.
But you just look up straight at the camera and pretend it's not happening?
No, it was very funny. And I don't know why, because we had two cameras there, and I didn't expect the dog to do it. It was a thing once a week or so. I would have a thing called Midget Menagerie, and kids would bring different pets.
Yeah.
And this damn little dog just did it, and the audience started to laugh before I was aware of it. And when that became aware to me, it was funny, and I laughed.
Oh, what were those big shoes, huh?
Yeah. And speaking of the big shoes, another time it wasn't on the show, but I took one of the big shoes that's worn quite a bit, and I took it down here to a shoe place to be fixed, and this little Italian cobbler, when I put the shoe up on the thing, he just looked at it, and he leaned over the counter to look down at my feet.
Oh no.
Had elephantiasis or something. So we're just coming out of a commercial. I said, okay, Rob, get the bicycle barrel, meaning it was one game we had. He knew what I meant. So we got the barrel out and the paddles for it, and a bike came from out of the prop room and started. I said, hey, kids, we have that time for a game. I need two boys over here, two girls over here, the girl in the blue dress. And it was a thing where they'd knock a little shuttlecock with the paddle if they could get it into a barrel, which was not easy to do. So I lined the kids up, and I, Jesus Christ, where did she come from? There's little Kathleen Quinlan, a dear little friend of mine, a personal friend, the boss's kid.
I walked right in.
No, I pointed, I said, the girl in the blue dress, I just out of the corner of my eye, I saw a girl with a blue dress. But she had come in with a girlfriend or two after school and had the guys on the stage over, and there were some empty seats down at the end where the kid couldn't get on camera too often, so they, you know, pulled the kids to slide on it. I thought, oh, geez. So sure enough, Kathy, who is very well coordinated and has always been extremely athletic, a kid, she got into, well, she's a gymnast, which very few people know, and a diver and a swimmer. And she was, even like, she was 7 or 8 then, she had her own wetsuit and was a scuba diver then, and a good one. I've been fishing with that kid, and she's great. By God, boom, into the barrel. And there she won the thing, and the moment that show was over, I beat my tail, because we were always under the gun on plugola or payola or any of that sort of thing. And I beat my way into her dad's office. He was a very hard guy to see. I just walked in, and there were people waiting past the secretary, and I said, I gotta see Bob right away.
Makeup and all?
And I was stolen makeup, yeah. I said, emergency, and somebody was in there with him. I said, Bob, I gotta tell you something, man. Had the bicycle thing, I didn't know who it was. It turns out your kid won it. He said, oh, Jesus Christ. Okay, he still comes over frequently. We're very close friends. He said, you son of a bitch, you got her into that business. You got her into show business. He put me on, of course. He said, she won that goddamn bicycle on your show and saw how easy showbiz was. You got something for doing nothing on camera. Still putting me on.
You know, I'd like
to... Bozo made... Bozo never... Harmon was all proud. He was upset because the show never got an Emmy. I've nominated 3 times for an Emmy. And he would call me each time the night of the local Emmys. And say, now, if you win this time, I'm going to be there, and I want you to introduce me, and I'll just get up and say a few words. I say, no way, I'm just going to thank people, and certainly thank the producer of the cartoons. He said, no, I want you to introduce me so I can address the audience. I said, bullshit, I'm not going to do it. So then he would have his publicity guys call me. And again, I'm sorry I'm being negative about this guy, but there's little love there.
Happening today, don't you think that the local television stations especially lack figures like there were so many before?
Oh, yeah.
there were, I mean, it seems to me you could turn on one station and there's Engineer Bill, and then the other station there's Tom Hatton.
Yeah.
You know, and so forth.
That's right. They lose, and believe me, I love Hanna-Barbera and the producers of all the other cartoons. I also love violence. In its right place, a guy getting hit with a pie or whatever. I just did a thing called Just for Laughs. It's just sort of a sister show to Laugh In, where we used a lot of slapstick, which is basically violence. And it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's a shame that there are not the local children's shows. None of us, I'm ever claiming, were heroes or whatever, but when a bunch of sick kids in the children's hospital want to see somebody, they can't get a cartoon character out if they live in Omaha or Savannah or whatever. Somebody will very often go out from Disney's, or a guy in a deputy dog suit might go out. But we went around a lot of the hospitals, we met a lot of people, and the kids got to come to our shows. And with only cartoon product on the air, I think they've lost a lot of that flavor of having live local guys.
That you can see every day, that you, it's almost like tuning in.
Yeah, and then you can get together with a bunch of your friends and come to the show and actually be there. I really enjoyed meeting the kids and a lot of their parents and putting the kids on the show. It's a big thrill for kids to be able to go to a station and be on TV and wave at the cameras and have their friends see them. Cop on the desk in Linwood, calling me, these things don't happen often. Well, this is when I was doing Buck Sureshot. He said, hey, we've got a kid in the hospital here, the police station, the hospital, we're in the same place. He said, he's got an indented skull fracture and they won't operate unless they get his parents' permission. We don't know who he is. No ID on him. Said, I know my kids watch you, and I just wonder if you would describe this kid. And I remember to this day, in fact, Matt Weinstock, who was the columnist, and wrote it up. He said, he's riding a blue bicycle, the kid got white hair. And he said, the reason I'm calling you instead of any of the other guys, he said, I noticed my kids rode in for one of those plastic beaded Indian belts. But one of my sponsors was giving away on a premium basis. And he said, this kid is wearing one, but it doesn't have his name on it. Like most of the kids would have their names on them. That was part of the deal. So he said, but I just thought I'd call you.
Wow.
So there have been other situations, but none that I can remember like this, especially that got written up. There's no way you can say no to that. And the way you do it, you go through the program department and the community relations department, all that bullshit. You're coming out of a cartoon, I say, hey, now this is sort of unusual. And said, now in Linwood, there's a young man who's been hurt and is in the hospital, and they would really like to see his parents. And he's got white hair, and it's a blue bicycle, and he's been in an accident. If any of you kids have a friend like that and know where this boy, anyway, his grandmother was home and went to the hospital and called his mother. The grandmother couldn't say, his mother.
Mm-hmm.
And they operated and the kid ended up okay. He might have ended up okay anyway, I don't know. But again, you have you really get involved, including lots of involvement. Remember one time the same guy, his name comes up again, Bob Quinlan, said, I met with a bunch of mothers over in the Los Feliz area. I had to address them, and they brought up the subject of kids' shows. He said, they're an angry bunch of women about Buck Sherwood. He said, next time I get a call like that, you're going out and talk to them. I said, okay, why not? Just to get them off my back. I got about 3 weeks later. He was on my back. He said, you're going out and address this group, which I did. And boy, they
let you have it.
They really let me have it.
Yeah.
But all you have to do is explain a few things to them. If your children don't know any better, if they don't know that I'm putting them on, if they can't tell immediately that I'm using bad English, it might be because the English used around the home isn't perfect. And you're a pigeon on TV, and they know, they knew then that 5 or 6 or 100 letters negative is going to get a lot of attention. End of every show that I did. I don't think
it that's where my research was on that one, watching it, because that's the only way.
You watch it locally here.
Sure.
Remember, kids. I'll keep laughing. And I think my dad always did that, signing off on anything, even after a personal.
It's a good way to sign off. It's a high point to sign off.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Remember, kids. I'll keep laughing.
The interview you just listened to was with Vance Kolvig, recorded at his home at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Thursday, February 16th, 1978.
Paul Mayer's Children's Television Archive.